For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the deaths of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war.
Ay me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now hath seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jut upon the innocent and aweless throne.
What is a man? Sure he made us with such large discourse, looking before and after, gave us not that capability and godlike reason to fust in us unused.
O my dear father, restoration hang thy medicine on my lips, and let this kiss repair those violent harms that my two sisters have in thy reverence made.
I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the sceptre and the ball, the sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the throne he sits on, nor the pomp that beats on the high shore of the world.
This is the mighty history of the British Empire, a people living on a tiny island in the North Atlantic Ocean. Built an empire that circled the earth and brought freedom and education to languishing millions. This empire was blessed by Almighty God and one of his best educated teachers, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare has educated some of the greatest leaders of all time, such as Abraham Lincoln and Winston Churchill.
We shall never surrender.
Our troubled world needs a fresh crew of nation-building leaders. Are you ready to step up to the challenge? Welcome to the exciting classroom of Shakespeare's Royal Education with host Dennis Leap.
Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Shakespeare's Royal Education. Well, I don't have any comments today, and that's probably a good thing, because I have to confess something very serious. I made a mistake on our last program, and I want to fix that. Now, on our last podcast, we ended Act 4, Scene 3, where Arthur killed himself. And you remember now, everybody was getting worried, and even me reading it, was he really going to be executed by Hubert? And actually, we know that he talked Hubert out of it. But I wanted to make a few corrections here to what I said on my last program. Now, Hubert did not hold Arthur imprisoned in Angiers. That is not what happened. Actually, Hubert held Arthur imprisoned in King John's Castle in England. And so if you go and you read, and I was reading different pages, and I probably got it all mixed up. But he was actually at King John's Castle in England. Now, remember, the young boy convinced Hubert not to execute him, which was really, I thought, probably one of the best parts of the whole section we were reading. And then remember also that in Act 4, Scene 2, King John repented of his desire to execute Arthur. And that's on page 78, line 103. So John was beginning to feel remorse for having to want to kill his nephew. But in Act 4, Scene 3, however, still captured in King John's castle, Arthur managed to escape by climbing a high castle wall, thinking that he would be safe in jumping to freedom. Now, you can tell he's a young kid because he didn't know. But we have to remember that Arthur was killed. I mean, that's historically true. So he managed to escape by climbing the high castle wall, thinking that he would be safe in jumping to freedom. This was a serious mistake. He literally executed himself from the fall. So all of that, all of he went through to keep himself from getting his eyes put out. He could have lived for a little while longer, but he ended up killing himself. Now, that's also, if we are looking at Act 4, Scene 3, this is why in Act 4, Scene 3, that Pembroke, Salisbury, and Bigot see Arthur lying dead on the street. And that's page 86. So if you really put it all together now, I mean, Salisbury, Bigot, and Pembroke were not in Angiers. So that's why they actually see it right there in England. And essentially, this scene also is where it's revealed that Pembroke, Salisbury, and Bigot are already working with Cardinal Pandolf and the French against King John. So this is the final act, and we know that the play means, or the title, the real title of the play is The Life and Death of King John. And so we have to have him killed off before the end of Act 5. And so this is what's coming. And so it is interesting. It's really sad how actually the British leaders, you know, the landowners, barons, they all were turning against King John as well. Now, also, we did find out in the play, in case I didn't mention it, that actually during the same time period, his mother actually died. And also Constance, and this is like historically, his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine, died at the same time. And his aunt Constance, and or his brother's wife, she also died around the same time. So hopefully you all picked that up. If you're really reading, you would have said, "Wow, what a dumb guy over there." But anyway, hopefully that will help make it clearer for you. Now for today's program, I want to move on to Act 5, Scene 1. And the thing is, it's actually a short Act 5, and so probably not going to take too long to get through this. But there's a lot of things in here that are really, really interesting. So I'm going to begin today on page 92, and if you're counting pages, that's where we're going to start today. And it is a really disturbing kind of scene because of what King John does in this scene. And so at the very top of your page, you should see that it's Act 5, Scene 1, enter King John and Pandolf with attendants. And so to me, that's really interesting. But it's also, like I said, it's very disturbing. And here's what takes place. It says, King John, he says, "Thus I have yielded up unto your hand the circle of my glory." So here John and Pandolf are together, and you know from previous discussions in the play that John did not want to surrender to the Pope. He was not going to surrender. He was not going to do the Pope's bidding and appoint his choice for the Archbishop, and now all of a sudden he's gotten soft, and essentially what he's doing there when he says I'm handing you the circle of my glory, he's handing him the crown. And I think in previous programs we talked about, as soon as he got back to England, he had himself recrowned, so that the Pope would know that he was crowned twice by England, and so therefore he's not in subjection to the Pope. And so here he hands his crown, to Pandolf, and then essentially Pandolf takes it, and this is what Pandolf says. He says, "Take again from this my hand, as holding up the Pope, your sovereign greatness and authority." So Pandolf says, "Okay, you handed me your crown. Now I'm actually giving it to you for the Pope. I'm standing in for the Pope, and now we're going to give you the crown." And so essentially what he's saying is, "We have now crowned you King of England." And so essentially what that means is that John is going to surrender to the authority of the Pope. And if we look into English history, when you look at Queen Elizabeth and her father, and in the family, the Tudors, they would not surrender to the Pope, and that has really irritated the Pope. And over the years, now we know, in a very sad way, that the current family on the throne in England have submitted to the Pope. And even the Archbishop of Canterbury has now also surrendered to the Pope And we know prophetically that the Holy Roman Empire is going to come back into play. And that's what we're seeing today. So this is really, really sad. All right, so Pandulf gives the throne, gives the crown back to him. And then King John then says, now keep your holy word. Go meet the French, and from His Holiness use all your power to stop their marches. And so you have to understand that during this whole play, Pandulf has been stirring up this whole vengeance between France and between England. And so now there's war. There's actual war beginning. And remember now, and his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine, is gone. Constance is gone. The young Arthur is gone. And so now at the end of the play, this is like the end of his life. You know, what can he really be proud of? That's what I think, King John. And so he goes, now keep your holy word, go meet the French. And now I could say it right now, just to get this up in your mind, is guess who's leading the French? The Dauphin. Louis. And remember, we talked in the last program how, you know, Pandulf and Louis got together, and Pandulf puts in his mind, hey, you're married to Blanche. You could take the throne of England. So essentially, that's what's happening. Louis has really bitten into the program, and he said, okay, we're going to take England. And, it's just amazing, that this is going on. But he goes on to say, keep your holy word, go meet the French, and from His Holiness use all your power to stop their marches, for we are inflamed. Our discontented countries do revolt, our people quarrel with obedience, swearing allegiance and the love of soul to stranger blood, to foreign royalty. And so what John is saying, and he knows it, that these the top leaders in England have joined with the French already. You know, they've combined, and they're working together. And he says, this inundation of mistempered humor rests by you only to be qualified. Then pause not, for the present time is so sick. And he's saying, look, he's really sick. This whole time is sick. He said, the present medicine must be ministered, or overthrow incurable ensues. So he said, look, Pandulf, if you don't do this, if you don't stop all this, there's going to be a lot of dead people. And so you have a job to do here. Now, Pandulf comes back and he says, it was my breath that blew this tempest up upon your stubborn usage of the Pope. And so Pandulf admits it. Yeah, I stirred all this up because you wouldn't submit to the Pope. But since you are a gentle convertite, so I guess he's saying he's now converted, my tongue shall hush again the storm of war and make fair weather in your blustering land. On this Ascension Day, remember well upon your oath of service to the Pope, go I to make the French lay down their arms. And so he brings up this Catholic holy day, and it's called the Ascension Day. And this supposedly is Ascension Day, is the day, after Christ returns to heaven after, being resurrected. And remember, he was on the earth 40 days after he was resurrected before he, went back into see God the Father in heaven. And King John says, is this Ascension Day? Did not the prophet say that before Ascension Day at noon, my crown I should give off? Even so I did suppose it should be on constraint, but heaven be thanked, it is but voluntary. And so John is really, he's really sucking up to the Pope's legate. Now it's interesting that here comes Richard, the Lionheart's illegitimate son. And he's the only one that seems to have any sense about him. he says, all Kent hath yielded, nothing there holds out but Dover Castle. London has received, like a kind host, the Dauphin and his powers. Your nobles will not hear you, but are gone to offer service to your enemy. and wild amazement hurries up and down the little number of your doubtful friends. So this is Richard. Now, he's the one that only makes sense, even when he's around John. He's the one that actually has the fighting spirit. That's because he's the son of Richard the Lionheart, you know. And King John then says to Richard, young Richard, he said, "Would not my lords return to me again after they heard young Arthur was alive?" And so here's the point here is that John had repented. He didn't want Arthur killed. Hubert came in and said he was not dead because the kid talked him out of it. But not everybody knew that he climbed the wall and jumped and killed himself yet, except for Pembroke, Salisbury, and Bigot. They all know what happened. And he said, look, as far as John was concerned, Arthur was still alive. And then the bastard says, then they found him dead and cast into the streets, an empty casket where the jewel of life by some damned hand was robbed and taken away. And then King John says, the villain Hubert told me he did live. And so now poor Hubert is in big trouble because he said he was alive, but he was alive. It wasn't Hubert's fault that, the young boy did not have any sense of gravity. He didn't realize if you're up, if you're five or six stories up, it's likely you're going to jump off. You're going to be in big trouble. And, there's a lot of rocks you're going to fall on. And he said, if you go back and read it, he says, I fell on the stones of England. And he talks about his bones, the stones got his bones. And, there's actually another poet from England that talked about that he wanted his bones buried in England. And he wrote a poem about that. So here, Richard, Richard the Lionheart, the illegitimate Richard, illegitimate son of Richard, says, so on my soul he did for aught he knew, but wherefore do you droop? Why look you so sad? But great in act as you have been in thought, let not the world see fear and sad distrust. Govern the motion of a kingly eye. And so the illegitimate son of Richard the Lionheart sees that the king isn't a fighting king. You should take up and fight. Get up and fight. He says, be stirring as the time. Be fire with fire. Threaten the threatener and outface the brow of bragging horror. So shall inferior eyes that borrow their behaviors from the great grow great by your example and put on the dauntless spirit of resolution. Away and glisten like the god of war when he intends to become the field. Show boldness and aspiring confidence. I mean, if I were John and this young kid is yelling at me like that, I'd slap him. But maybe he needed the slap. Maybe John needed it. He says, what shall they seek the lion in his den and fright him there and make him tremble there? Oh, let it not be said, forage and run to meet displeasure from the doors and grapple with him ere come so nigh. And then King John comes back. He says, the legate of the Pope hath been with me, and I have made a happy peace with him, and he has promised to dismiss the powers led by the Dauphin. And then Richard comes back and says, oh, inglorious league. He said, what did you do? And he says, shall we, upon the footing of our land, send fair play orders and make compromise, insinuation, parley, and base truce, to arms invasive, shall a beardless boy, a cockered silken wanton brave our fields, and flesh in his spirit, in a warlike soil, mocking the air with colors idly spread, and find no cheek, let us, my liege, to arms. Perchance the cardinal cannot make your peace, or if he do, let it at least be said, they saw we had a purpose of defense. And so he's talking about, he's really mocking the Dauphin there. He said, hey, well, he's coming here with all these other colors. And, but look, we find no cheek, so he probably doesn't have a beard or anything. he's just a kid, maybe. And King John says, having thou the ordering of this present time, Away then, with good courage, yet I know our party may well meet a prouder foe. So this is Richard the Lionheart's son, and he's tough. He's talking tough. He's got the spirit his father had, and he's telling the king, "Come on, get up, get going." Now, if Eleanor of Aquitaine had been alive, she'd be telling him the same thing. What's wrong with you? So now we're going to go to Act 5, Scene 2, and this is really interesting. Here we have in here, these are in arms. They're ready to war. This is Louis, the Dauphin. But look who's with him, Salisbury. Now, Mellon, I think, is also French, but he has Pembroke, Bigod, and soldiers. So they're all together. You know, and Louis says, "My Lord Mellon, let this be copied out and keep it safe for our remembrance. Return the precedent to those lords again, that having our fair order written down, both they and we perusing, or these notes may know whereof we took the sacrament, and keep our faith firm and inviolable." So essentially what Louis wants is he wants this history written down, that Salisbury, Pembroke, Bacot, and they took the sacrament together. They are all submissive to Rome. That's basically what he's saying. And they want this as part of history. They want this known. So then Salisbury says, "Upon our sides it never shall be broken." And this is Salisbury saying, look, we've now made this league. They're in bed with Pandolf. They're going to submit to the Holy Roman Empire. And he keeps going and says, "A noble Dauphin, albeit we swear a voluntary zeal and unurged faith to your proceedings, yet believe me, Prince, I'm not glad that such a sore of time should seek a plaster by contemned revolt." And so he said, the word plaster there means a Band-Aid or something to pull a wound together. And he said, we've got this together now. And he said, "We're going to all fight to keep it together." And it says, "And heal the invented canker of one wound by making many." And then so here's Salisbury is getting kind of emotional here. He says, "Oh, it grieves my soul that I must draw this metal from my side to be a widowmaker." I mean, what kind of warrior is that? He says, "Oh, and there were honorable rescue and defense, cries out upon the name of Salisbury. But such is the infection of the time that for the health and physic of our right, we cannot deal with the very hand of stern injustice and confused wrong. And it is not pity, oh my grieved friends, that we the sons and children of this isle were born to see so sad an hour as this." And so essentially what Shakespeare is writing as poetry for us is the history that King John really did mess things up. England was not in good shape at that time, and it was getting worse. He says, "Wherein we step after a stranger, march upon her gentle bosom, and fill up her enemy's ranks, I must withdraw and weep upon the spot of this enforced cause. To grace the gentry of a land remote and follow unacquainted colors here, what here, O nations, that thou couldst remove that Neptune's arms who clipped thee about would bear thee from the knowledge of thyself and grapple thee upon a pagan shore." And he goes on to say, "Where these two Christian armies might combine the blood of malice in a vein of league and not to spend it so unneighborly." So in other words, what Pembroke and what Salisbury and what Bigot are all saying is, "Wow, this is really sad. We all need to be crying. It's very bad." And then Louis comes in, and this is the Dauphin, and this he's got to have his comment now. He says, "A noble temper dost thou show in this, a great affections resting in thy bosom doth make an earthquake of nobility. Oh, what a noble combat hast thou fought between compulsion and a brave respect. Let me wipe off this honorable dew that silverly doth progress on thy cheeks." So here he's bawling. I mean, Salisbury's crying his eyes out. And he says, "Okay, let me see if I can wipe this off, this honorable dew, that silverly doth progress on thy cheeks. My heart hath melted at a lady's tears. That's a good comment, you big lady. Being an ordinary inundation, but this effusion of such manly drops, this shower blown up by the tempest of the soul, startles mine eyes and makes me more amazed than had I seen the vaulty top of heaven, figured quite over with burning meteors. Lift thy brow, renowned Salisbury, and with great heart heave away this storm. Command these waters to those baby eyes that never saw the giant world enraged, nor met with fortune other than at feast. For warm a blood of mirth, of gossiping, come, come, for thou shalt thrust thy hand as deep into the purse of rich prosperity as Lewis himself. So, nobles, shall you all that knit your sinews to the strength of mine. And so he said, look, we're joined together. You know, France, we're in better shape than you are. Let's just knit our sinews together. And guess who comes on the scene? Pandolf. Pandolf comes in, and Lewis is still talking. He says, and even there, methinks, an angel spake. Look where the holy legate comes apace to give us warn from the hand of heaven, and on our actions set the name of right with holy breath. So they think Pandolf is like this angel from heaven, and he's got a message. And Pandolf comes in and says, hail, noble prince of France. The next is this. King John hath reconciled himself to Rome. His spirit is come in that so stood out against the Holy Church, the great metropolis and the see of Rome. Therefore thy threatening colors now wind up and tame the savage spirit of wild war that like a lion fostered up at hand, it may lie gently at the foot of peace and be no further harmful than in show. So remember, Pandolf told King John, I'll get this all stopped. Don't worry about it. I got it down. Guess what? Lewis tells him to buzz off. Basically, he goes on. He says, your grace shall pardon me. I will not back. You know, he's not going to back up. He says, I am too high born to be propertied, to be a second at control, or useful serving man and instrument to any sovereign state throughout the world. So Lewis is saying, basically, I don't report to Rome. That's what he's saying. I have my own throne. I'm not reporting to Rome. And, that's the right approach. He says, your breath first kindled the dead coal of wars between this chastised kingdom and myself and brought in matter that should feed this fire. And now 'tis far too huge to be blown out. With that same weak wind which enkindled it, you taught me how to know the face of right, acquainted me with interest to this land. And now the Dauphin is telling everybody what Pandolf suggested to him. Take the throne. And he's saying, hey, I'm going to take it now. I've got Rome on my side. I've got the Pope on my side. He said, I'm going to take it. He goes on to say, yea, thrust this enterprise into my heart, and come you now to tell me John hath made his peace with Rome. What is that peace to me? I, by the honor of my marriage bed, after young Arthur, claim this land for mine. And now it is half conquered. Must I back because that John hath made his peace with Rome? And listen to this. Am I Rome's slave? I mean, this guy, you know, for being a Dauphin, you know, he could look like a silly French guy. He's tough. He wants to fight. What penny hath Rome borne? What men provided? What munitions sent to underprop this action? Is not I that undergo this charge? Who else but I, and such to my claim are liable, sweat in this business and maintain this war? Have I not heard these islanders shout out, vive le roi, you know, vive the king, he says, as I have banked their towns. Have I not here the best cards for the game to win this easy match played for a crown? Shall not I now give over the yielded set? No, no, on my soul it never shall be said. Now Pandolf says, you look on but He said, you look but on the outside of this work. And, you know, Pandolf says, now there's an inner work here you're not fixing, you're not looking at. And, of course, Pandolf is probably trying to come up with some religious thing. But notice what Lewis says, outside or inside, I will not return till my attempt so much be glorified as to my ample hope was promised. Before I drew this gallant head of war and called these fiery spirits from the world to outlook conquest and to win renown, even in the jaws of danger of death. So he made it very clear that he was not going to stop. He was going to keep the war going. And so, you know, it's really quite interesting there. And let's just go on now. This is page 100. And it's interesting who steps in here. And again, remember now, King, well, I don't want to get too far ahead of it just to ruin it for you. But King John is not in the scenes right now, but he's going to show up here pretty soon. But this is this is the illegitimate son. He's going to come in now. And he said, according to the fair play of the world, let me have audience. I am sent to speak. My holy land of Milan, from the king I come to learn how you have dealt for him. And as you answer, I do know the scope and warrant limited unto my tongue. And Pandolf, you know, he jumps in. He said, the Dauphin is too willful opposite and will not temporize with my entreaties. He flatly says he'll not lay down his arms. And then the illegitimate Richard says, by all the blood that ever fury breathed, the youth says, well, now hear our English king. For thus his loyalty does speak in me. He is prepared, and reason too he should, this apish and unmannerly approach, this harnessed mask and unadvised revel, this unheard sauciness and boyish troops, the king does smile at and is well prepared to whip this dwarfish war, these pygmy arms, from out the circle of his territories, that hand which hath the strength even at your door, to cudgel you and make you take the hatch, to dive like buckets in concealed wells, to crouch and litter of your stable planks, to lie like pawns locked in chests and trunks, to hug with swine, to seek sweet safety out, in vaults and prisons, and to thrill and shake even at the crying of your nation's crow, thinking his voice an armed Englishman, shall that victorious hand be feebled here, that in your chambers gave you chastisement? No. Now the gallant monarch is in arms, and like an eagle over his airy towers, to souse annoyance that comes near his nest, and you degenerate, you ingrate revolt, you bloody Neros, ripping up the womb of your dear mother England, blush for shame, for your own ladies and pale-visaged maids, like Amazons, come tripping after drums, their thimbles into armed gauntlets change, their needles to lances, and their gentle hearts to fierce and bloody inclination. And so that's really a really great poem there. And, you know, England, they were fighters. I mean, look at Winston Churchill. He's a fighter. They knew how to fight. And the British Empire knew how to control, let's say, the bloody masses. Then Lewis says, there end the brave, and turn thy face in peace. We grant thou canst outscold us. Fare thee well. We hold our time to precious to be spent with such a brabbler. And then Pandolf says, give me leave to speak. And look what the young Richard says, no, I will speak. And so he's willing to tell Pandolf right off, no, you're not speaking anymore. Then Lewis says, we will attend to neither. Strike up the drums, let the tongue of war plead for our interest and our being here. Now, young Richard, the Lionheart, illegitimate son, is not going to back down. He says, indeed, your drums being beaten will cry out, and so shall you being beaten. But do but start and echo with the clamor of thy drum, and even at hand a drum is ready braced, that shall reverberate all as loud as thine, sound but another, and another shall as loud as thine rattle the welkin's ear, and mock the deep mouth thunder. For at hand, not trusting to this halting legate here, whom he hath used rather for sport than need, is warlike John, and in his forehead sits a bare-ribbed death, whose office is this day to feast upon whole thousands of the French. The young Richard is saying, hey, yeah, my king's ready to eat up the French. Louis says, strike up your drums to find this danger out. And the young Richard says, and thou shalt find a Dauphin, do not doubt. So we're going to move now into scene three. And this is Act 5, Scene 3, and now we're going to go back to the English camp. And the King John is there. How goes the day with us? Oh, tell me, Hubert. And then Hubert says, badly, I fear. How fares your majesty? Now, there's something here that's really important that we understand. The King John said, this fever that hath troubled me so long lies heavy on me. Oh, my heart is sick. So King John is sick right now. And then a messenger enters and says, my lord, your valiant kinsman Falconbridge desires your majesty to leave the field and send him word by me which way you go. And so this is, young Richard, he's saying, look, king, get off the field. And then King John says, tell him towards Swinstad to the abbey there. And the Falconbridge or your young Richard knows he's sick. And the messenger says, be of good comfort for the great supply that was expected by the Dauphin here are racked 3 nights ago on Goodwin Sands. This news was brought to Richard, but even now the French fight coldly and retire themselves. So this is another thing that Shakespeare is putting in here is the French were caught at sea. There was a vicious storm at sea, and it knocked all their ships out. So they don't have all the ammo that the Dauphin was bragging about. And King John says, "Ay me, this tyrant fever burns me up and will not let me welcome this good news. Set on towards Swinstead to my litter straight. Weakness possesses me, and I am faint." So again, there's those rhyming couplets that Shakespeare is so well known for. Okay, now we're going to go into act, scene four. So this is Salisbury, Pembroke, and Bigot. And let's see what these rats have to say. Salisbury said, I did not think the king so stored with friends. And then Pembroke says, up once again, put spirit in the French. If they miscarry, we miscarry too. So in some ways, Richard, the illegitimate Richard, the Lionheart, has scared the daylights out of Salisbury and Pembroke, telling him that the king's got all this army. It says, Salisbury, that misbegotten devil Falconbridge, in spite of spite, alone upholds the day. They say King John, sore sick, has left the field, which he has. And then Mellon, he was the other one of the Frenchmen, he's wounded. He said, lead me to the revolts of English here. When we were happy, we had our other names. Pembroke then says, it is the Count Mellon. And then Salisbury said, wounded to death. So the Count Mellon he's going to die. And Mellon says, fly, noble English, you are bought and sold. Unthread the rude eye of rebellion and welcome home again discarded faith. Seek out King John and fall before his feet, for if the French be lords of this loud day, he means to recompense the pains you take by cutting off your heads. So Mellon tells them, look, you three, as soon as you get back to England, he's going to cut your heads off. And, it's King John, I guess, was ready to really, do some rocking and rolling. He says, thus hath he sworn, and I with him, and many more with me, upon the altar at St. Edmundsbury, even on that altar where you swore to you dear enmity and everlasting love. So there's something in the history there that Shakespeare must have known about the St. Edmundsbury. He says, Salisbury, may this be possible, may this be true. Mellon says, have I not hideous death with my view, retaining but a quantity of life, which bleeds away even as a form of wax resolves from his figure against the fire? What in the world should make me now deceive, since I must lose the use of all deceit? Why should I then be false, since it is true that I must die here and live hence by truth? I say again, if Lewis do win the day, he is forsworn if ever those eyes of yours behold another daybreak in the east, by even this night whose black contagious breath already smokes about the burning crest of the old feeble and day-wearied sun, even this ill night your breathing shall expire, paying the fine of rated treachery, even with a treacherous fine of all your lives. If Lewis be your assistance with the day, can mend me to one Hubert with your king. The love of him and this respect besides for that my grandsire was an Englishman awakes my conscience to confess all this, in lieu whereof I pray, bear me hence from forth the noise and rumor of the field, where I may think of the remnant of my thoughts in peace and part this body and my soul with contemplation and devout desires. So Mellon is saying, this is the Frenchman, he's saying, hey, I'm out. Leave me alone. I got to get ready to die. Salisbury says, we do believe thee and beshrew my soul, but I do not love the favor in the form of this most fair occasion by which we will untread the steps of damned flight and like a baited and retired flood, leaving our rankness and irregular course, stoop low within those bounds we have overlooked, and calmly run on in obedience. Even to our ocean, to our great King John, my arm shall give thee help to bear thee hence, for I do see the cruel pangs of death right in thine eye. Away, my friends, new flight and happy newness that intends old right. And so here we're now, we're really getting through. And we're getting through to the end. Now, let's just go on. Act 5, Scene 5, the dolphin comes in his train. And then Lewis says, the sun of heaven methought was loath to set, but stayed and made the western welkin blush, when English measured backward their own ground in faint retire. Oh, bravely came we off, when with a volley of our needless shot, after such bloody toil, we bid good night, and wound our tottering colors clearly up, last in the field and almost lords of it. So essentially, Lewis did not win the war. Now there's a messenger saying, where is my prince, the Dauphin? And Lewis says, here, what news? He says, the Count Mellon is slain. The English lords, by his persuasion, are again fallen off. And your supply, which you have wished so long, are cast away and sunk on Goodwin Sands. So Lewis now realizes everything that was being sent to him from France is now lost. He says, ah, foul, shrewd news, beshrew the very heart. I did not think to be so sad tonight. And this hath made me, who was he that said, King John did fly an hour or two before, the stumbling knight did part our weary powers. So King John had already left the field, but for a different reason. And we're going to find that out here in a minute. It says, well, keep good quarter and good care tonight. The day shall not be up as soon as I to try the fair adventure of tomorrow. And so they exit the stage. And then here we are at Act 5, Scene 6. We're really coming now very, really, really, really close to the end. So here we have the illegitimate son and Hubert. They come on the scene. And then Hubert says, who's there? Speak, ho. Speak quickly or I'll shoot. And Richard says, a friend, who art thou? Hubert says, oh, the part of England. And then the bastard says, where dost thou go? And he says, what's that to thee? Why may I not demand of thine affairs as well as thou of mine? And Hubert, and he says, Hubert, I think. This is Richard the Lionheart's illegitimate son. He says, Hubert, I think, you have a perfect thought. I will upon all hazards well believe thou art my friend and knowest my tongue so well. Who art thou? So remember now, it's pitch black. It's pitch dark. You know, the day is over, and they're trying to figure out who each other is. Then the lion, I'll call him Richard the Lionheart, son. Who wilt thou, if thou please, thou mayest befriend me so much as to think I come one way of the Plantagenets? And then Hubert says, unkind remembrance, thou and eyeless knight have done me shame. Brave soldier, pardon me that any assent breaking from thy tongue should scape the true acquaintance of mine ear. So there the bastard is talking about, or Richard the Lionheart's son, illegitimate son. He is saying what he is. He's a Plantagenet. And as we're getting ready for our next play, we're going to be into the Plantagenets more. Hubert says, unkind remembrance, thou and eyeless knight have done me shame. Brave soldier, pardon me that any accent breaking from thy tongue should scape the true acquaintance of mine ear. So Hubert said, I should have figured this out. He said, I'm sorry. Come, sans compliment, what news abroad? Why, here walk I in the black brow of night to find you out. Brief then, and what's the news? Oh, my sweet sir, news fitting to the night, black, fearful, comfortless, and horrible. He says, show me the very wound of all this ill news. I'm no woman. I'll not swoon at it. He says, the king I fear is poisoned by a monk. And so if you remember back not too long ago, remember when he sent Hubert back into England, he says, hit all the monasteries and steal all the money. Well, Hubert now is really surprised, or maybe shocked, that one of the monks has poisoned King John. I left him almost speechless and broke out to acquaint with you this evil, that you might the better arm you do to the sudden time than if you had at leisure known of this. How did he take it? Who did taste to him? He says, a monk, I tell you, a resolved villain, whose bowels suddenly burst out, the king yet speaks, and peradventure may recover. And so it doesn't look good for the king. It says, whom did thou leave to attend his majesty? And then Hubert says, why, know you not, the lords are all come back, and brought Prince Henry in their company, at whose request the king had pardoned them, and they are all about his majesty. So can you imagine that? You've got Salisbury, and you've got Bigot. You've got them hanging around the king because they know he's sick and he's dying. And then King Richard's illegitimate son is saying, withhold thine indignation, mighty heaven, and tempt us not to hear above our power. I tell thee, Hubert, half my power is power this night. Passing these flats are taken by the side. These Lincoln washes have devoured them. Myself, well mounted, hardly have escaped. Away before, conduct me to the king. I doubt he will be dead or ere I come. And so you know, this is really what we know, that King John is dead. We know he died. And historically, I haven't necessarily gone and looked at the history of this, but I'm assuming that Shakespeare realizes and knows that he was poisoned. So this is Acts 5, scene 7. So enter Prince Henry, Salisbury, and Bigot. Prince Henry, it's too late. The life of all his blood is touched corruptly, and his pure brain, which some suppose the soul's frail dwelling house, doth by the idle comments that it makes foretell the ending of mortality. Now, I think it's interesting there. Now, remember, now Shakespeare was a Bible reader. And here he says, when he's talking about his brain, he said his pure brain, which some suppose the soul's frail dwelling house. And so we know that God created human beings with a human spirit, and the human spirit is in the brain. And so you just wonder how much Shakespeare really knew about that. Then Pembroke goes on to say, His Highness yet does speak and holds belief that being brought into the open air, it would allay the burning quality of that fell poison which assails him. The Prince Harry says, let him be brought into the orchard here. Doth he still rage? He's more patient than when you left him, even now he sung. So then Prince Henry says, "O vanity of sickness, fierce extremes in their continuance will not feel themselves. Death had preyed upon the outward parts, leaves them invisible, and his siege is now against the mind, which he pricks and wounds with many legions of strange fantasies, which in their throng and press to that last hold confound themselves. 'Tis strange that death should sing. I am the signet to the pale, faint swan, who chants a doleful hymn to his own death, and from the organ pipe of frailty sings his soul and body to their lasting rest." So Salisbury's there, and he says, "Be of good comfort, Prince, for you are born to set a form that indigest, which he left so shapeless and so rude." And so King John is brought in now. And King John says, "Ay, Mary, now my soul hath elbow room. I would not out at windows nor at doors. There is so hot a summer in my bosom that all my bowels crumble up to dust. I am scribbled form, drawn with a pen upon a parchment, and against this fire do I shrink up." "How fares your majesty?" says Prince Henry. He says, "Poisoned, I'll ill fare. Dead, forsook, cast off, and none of you will bid the winter come to thrust his icy fingers in my maw, nor let my kingdom's rivers take their course through my burned bosom, nor entreat the north to make his bleak winds kiss my parched lips and comfort me with cold. I do not ask you much. I beg cold comfort, and you are so straight and so ungrateful you deny me that." And Prince Henry says, "Oh, that there were some virtue in my tears that might relieve you." And King John says, "The salt in them is hot. Within me is a hell, and there the poison is a fiend confined to tyrannize. O unreprievable condemned blood." And then all of a sudden, then his best soldier on the field, the bastard, comes in. He says, "Oh, I am scalded with my violent motion and spleen of speed to see your majesty." And he goes on, "Oh, cousin, thou art come to set mine eye. The tackle of my heart is cracked and burnt, and all the shrouds wherein my life should sail are turned to one thread, one little hair. My heart hath one poor spring to stay it by, which holds but till the news be uttered, and then all this thou seest is but a clod and module of confounded royalty." So then, young Richard says, "The Dauphin is preparing hitherward. Where God, he knows how well we shall answer him. For in a night the best part of my power, and I upon advantage did remove, were in the washes all unworthy, devoured by the unexpected flood." So it's at that point, when the bastard says he's gone after the Dauphin, then the king died. Salisbury says, "You breathe these dead news in as dead an ear. My liege, my lord, but now a king, now thus." So this is for Prince Henry. "Even so must I run on, and even so stop. What surety of the world, what hope, what stay, when this was now a king, and now is clay." Again, that's another great poem. Let me just read that for you again. "What surety of the world, what hope, what stay, when this was now a king, and now is just clay." I added the word just, by the way. So then the young Richard, the nephew, the lion heart, says, "Art thou gone so? I do but stay behind to do the office of thee of revenge. And then my soul shall wait on thee to heaven, and it on earth hath been thy servant still. Now, you stars that move in your right spheres, where be your powers? Show now your mended face, and instantly return with me again to push destruction and perpetual shame out of the weak door of our fainting land. Straight let us seek, or straight we shall be sought. The Dauphin rages at our very heels." And then Salisbury says, "It seems you know not then so much as we. The Cardinal Pandolf is within at rest, who half an hour since came from the Dauphin, and brings from him such offers of our peace as we with honor respect may take, with purpose presently to leave this war." So Salisbury, he's a good friend of the Pandolf, and the Pandolf says he's got peace. He's got the Dauphin to stop the war. And then Richard says, young Richard, he says, he will the rather do it when he sees ourselves well sinewed to our defense. Nay, 'tis in a manner done already, for many carriages he hath dispatched to the seaside and put his cause in quarrel to the disposing of the cardinal, with whom yourself, myself, and other lords, if you think meet, this afternoon will post to consummate this business happily. So then young Richard says again, let it be so, and you, my noble prince, with other princes that may best be spared, shall wait upon your father's funeral. And Prince Henry says, at Worcester must his body be interred, for so he willed it. And then the young Richard says, thither shall it then, and happily may your sweet self put on the lineal state and glory of the land, to whom with all submission on my knee I do bequeath my faithful services, in true subjection everlasting. And then he kneels down. Salisbury says, and the like tender of our love we make, to rest with the spot forevermore. Then the lords kneel. And then the king, Prince Henry, excuse me, says, I have a kind soul that would give you thanks and knows not how to do it but with tears. And so then here's the last lines of the play. The Richard the Lionheart's illegitimate son, standing up, says, oh, let us pay the time but needful woe, since it hath been beforehand with our griefs. This England never did, nor ever shall, lie at the proud foot of a conqueror, but when it first did help to wound itself. Now these her princes are come home again, come the three corners of the world in arms, and we shall shock them. Naught shall make us rue, if England to itself do rest but true. All right, so that is the end of King John. Now, there's a lot in there that we could talk about, but I think everybody understands what's going on here. And so again, remember now, this is not the easy play, and there's a lot of people today that still don't understand it. They don't understand it. But it is, I think it's very, very interesting play. I think it's one that I will be using at the beginning of the new school year next year. I'll be teaching the King's class for juniors, and King John will be one of the opening plays in that series. And now that's really basically all the time we have for today's program. Now on our next program, we will begin discussing the play titled Richard the Second. And it's probably one of my favorites. But the reason I want to move into Richard II is because I want to get into the Plantagenets. And remember now, Eleanor of Aquitaine was one of the grandmothers of the Plantagenets. And we'll talk a little bit about the history of Richard and with Edwards, the Edwards before him. So please write me any comments you may have to comments@kpcg.fm. You can also comment at my Twitter page, and that's titled Shakespeare's Royal Education. Now, you would be able to find a good used copy of King Richard at abebooks.com. Some copies, I'm sure, will be under $5. So thanks for joining me next time as we advance our royal education.
You've been listening to Shakespeare's Royal Education on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.